Well met, fellow adventurers. We are once again with Sir Croakington. Now, as I've left it hanging for quite a few days, I've had to restart in Blazon Key, Part 2, The Lady of Fallen Tree, where we're going to dispel that curse. Now, things have gone exactly as they did the first time round. And now we have to decide, do we set up camp for the night or not? Well, last time we set up camp for the night, something happened. And then we found out... a village had been destroyed for no apparent reason. So this time, just to see what happens else otherwise, we'll press on through the night. Your decision to press on through the night seems to surprise your three companions. Garth says that while the pike is more dangerous after night, resting in the wilds holds dangers of its own. Well, to get you to Fallen Tree, he says to William and John, wide ahead to scout out the road. And the sooner we do that, the better. I think you've made the right decision. Let's just keep our eyes and ears open. With the darkness swiftly closing in around you, you and your guides ride steadily eastward along a wide, deserted highway. You haven't gone far when Rhaenor, scouting the road ahead, turns and quickly rides back. He draws up to you and Gar, tells you that he and John smell smoke coming from somewhere up ahead. A lot of smoke, says, raising an eyebrow. John's gone on to have a look. Wait, here he comes now. John returns and announces that a small settlement, sprawled out through the trees on either side of the pike, is ablaze. I didn't get close enough to see it all, he says, as your nose detects the first hint of smoke. I'm surprised we can't see the glow from here. In no time at all, your four steeds are thundering along the pike towards an orange glow and a thick, low-hanging pole of black smoke that hovers just over the forest on either side of the road. As your eyes round a sharp bend, your weary eyes fall upon a shocking scene. A small village, divided by the road, is engulfed in flames. The fires appear to have been burning for quite some time, so even if I skip the night, I'm still too late to save a lot of people. Maybe not everyone, but a lot. It has been burning for quite some time, as many of the settlement structures are little more than massive heaps of smouldering ash. Oh, it's those bandits from earlier! They hadn't delayed me, I'd have got there in time! Although, if I hadn't been delayed, they'd probably just burned it down sooner. It's almost certainly has something to do with my mission. As you ride towards the blaze, your eyes scouring the burning village for any sign of danger, you begin to discover dozens of charred bodies, many of them strewn across the road, and that's why you need to have fire drills, so you know how to get out quickly. No, that's rude. Apart from the towering flames that continue to consume the settlement, you see nothing moving. Gar, his face bearing a deep crimson pallor in the flickering glow of the fire, rides up next to you and sighs. He immediately senses unease. I don't like this, he says. I believe this place is called Westgrove, but I'm not certain of it. I think it's not right about this. We need to be careful. So, I can investigate or not. Well, I can use divination to give me some clues first, and I will. Succeeded. 8 XP to divination. You instantly sense the presence of a powerful evil somewhere within the burning settlement. Beyond that, nothing else is clear. So I investigate the burning settlement, or not. I shall investigate the burning settlement, I mean, since it's there. The decision to investigate the burning village is met with grim nods from your three companions. The four of you dismount and leave your horses tethered to the edge of the road, away from the blaze, with your weapons drawn and your wary eyes scouring the smoke-filled gloom for any sign of danger. You move cautiously into the fire-engulfed settlement. Ronor suddenly cries out in alarm, and the four of you turn to the right, just as a small building, dust off the ash-covered lane, collapses into a heap of cinders and black smouldering timbers. You instinctively fall back and draw yourself into defensive stance as a shadowy, hulking figure begins to emerge from the smoke, billowing up from the incinerated structure. Okay, I don't think this is just some guy who's managed to get out just in time. And is in a lot of pain. What under the eyes of the Allfather is that? Gar, having tightened his grip on the hilt of his sword, turns to you as if seeking an answer to his question. Both Willow and Jod, their weapons held at the ready, keep their terror-stricken faces locked onto the monstrous figure slowly emerging from the wall of fire and smoke. The beast that steps into view, stomping through the ash piled amidst the remains of the burning building, is one that almost defies description. Now, if a lesser man was to describe it, they'd probably fail. But this is the GM, and he's very good at describing things. Especially if it is something that defies description. He's like, I'm going to describe it anyway. So, take that. Take that, you hard-to-describe thing. I'm describing you anyway. Towering ogre. Over half of its grey, leathery flesh replaced with iron. Ooh, must have hurt. Steps out of the ruins, its thick fingers gripping the haft of a heavy, spiked club. A series of clanking sounds echo above the crackle of the raging fire as the partially mechanized creature pivots its head in your direction. Your heart suddenly skips a beat as you catch sight of the sinister symbol emblazoned upon the ogre's plated torso. A clawed hand clutching an eye. You immediately recognise this orange simmering symbol to be the mark of wound skin. Now, we saw that mark quite a lot a long, long time ago when Hawkclaw was repeatedly under attack. And as far as Sir Croakington's concerned, it wasn't that long ago. And definitely not something he forgot. With a savage snarl and a single seemingly effortless swipe of his club, the fearsome iron ogre smashes down on the one nearby wall still standing. "Which of you is the one I'm supposed to find?" he growls, his half-iron head slowly pivoting as his cool gaze falls upon each of you in turn. Fearing that formidable minion of Woundskin will attack your three guides, and realizing it's you he's seeking, you boldly step forward, wrenching free from Gar's grasp as the grey-bearded woodsman attempts to hold you back. Yeah, I'm not very good at being bodyguarded. Not very good at that at all. Yeah, I think he probably tried to just pick me up, but I just... The Iron Ogre snarls triumphantly. You defiantly demand the ogre to tell you what it is he wants. Without answering your question, the Iron Beast raises his left hand, then thrusts it out in the direction of your three guides. As if struck by powerful blasts of invisible energy, your companions tumble backwards several yards, before landing in a smouldering heap of ash and charred wood. "So the want is you!" snarls the ogre, his heavy footfall shaking the ground as he stomps towards you. "From what I see, want fits you as well as any description might." With that, the ogre, a fearless champion who long ago entered the service of his immortal master, swipes out at you with this massive spiked club. You narrowly Dodge the deadly blow and swiftly counter, praying that your bold tactic will give your companions enough time to escape. It's Iron Maul the Reviled. Now, I don't think they're going to try to escape. They're probably gonna, if they can move at all, they're gonna try to help me. Maybe attacking from range, maybe sneaking up from behind, distracting it. Who knows? They'll try to help in some way, because that's their mission, and they know so much is at stake. This is Iron Maul the Reviled. It's nice that Runeskin has gone back to giving quirky named minions now. Because during the whole Horcrux thing, it was Oturok, 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 Oturok. I mean, they're interesting, but after the 159th Oturok, they start to become a bit samey, because they are literally all the same. They are mass-produced. But quirky named minions? I'm up for that. Guess he kind of retired those, because they weren't actually that strong. I mean, they were strong, far strong enough to terrorize regular people and militias, but against seasoned heroes, not really going to do. Also, or it might just be in the first time we encountered him, he wasn't really that fussed about killing me or not. But now he wants me alive so I can be added to his collection. Which means he doesn't want these loose cannons going off and doing who knows what. I just have Oturok. You can program them to just say, don't kill this guy. And also, I think a lot of them were sent by Glenoris, who is slightly less fussed about killing me. Just slightly. Begin combat. Iron Maul the Reviled. The half-metal ogre swipes at you with his iron club. Alright, and I swing my club. My club's better. Devastating blow for 27 damage, and then 30 damage. Then 30 damage. Stop with the devastating blows. I don't like being devastated. 26 damage, 32 damage. And slain. It was a 3+ fight as well. 11 XP, 256 experience to general. The Iron Ogre clatters forward and sinks to his knees or amidst the ashes and embers that litter the lane. Then, as the wounds that whittle its flesh begin to rapidly disappear, oh yeah, these guys, they're also immortal, in some sense. As in, they quickly heal, at least. Rises his feet and step back. A slimming field of silver sparkles suddenly envelops the massive creature. Seconds later, when the sparkles have vanished, there is no longer any sign of the fearsome beast. I'm guessing he was told, you know, fight him once and then bugger off. We're not going to kill him. We just slowly break him. And then when he is utterly without hope, he will come to me and say, I will do whatever you want. I am broken. Fix me. Fix me into something you can use. Because I don't have anything else left. Maybe that's his scheme. Gar, Widow, and Jod, having pulled themselves out of the smouldering heap into which they were tossed, arrive at your side. Gar places his hand on your back, then motions towards the road. Without a word, the four of you make your way through the burning village and back to the pike. Back on the road, you quickly retrieve your horses, and within moments the four of you are riding swiftly along the away from the burning settlement. Eventually, the smell of smoke and the orange glow of your towering flames disappear as you and your guides continue on your eastward course. As you ride, you find your thoughts continually returning to the fire-engulfed village and the iron ogre whose chest bore the symbol of Woundskin. We're lucky to have left with our lives, Esgar. What that thing was, I don't care to know. But we need to be more careful to see our task through. I don't think I shall ever forget what I've seen tonight. Few words are exchanged for the duration of the night's ride, as your uncounted miles slip away beneath the pounding hoofs of your tireless and very, very good steeds. The world beyond the destroyed settlement proves largely and thankfully uneventful. Now and again you encounter a band of travellers moving along the pike, most unescorted, but several in the company of hired guards. Okay, everything's back to normal. I'm going to pause for a bit until we get to some new stuff. Okay, now we're back to the point where we choose the path. There's a mark on the stone, top of that stone, I made years back to Esgar, drawing a draught from his water skin. We can go northeast or southeast from here. Southeast is the shortest of the paths, but it's a bit more watery that way. Northeast would be a bit longer, it's firmer. Beyond that, I don't think I have anything else to say. What do you think, Sir Crokington? I leave the decision to you. Okay, I think last time I went southeast and there was a lot of bog and stomping and squelching. But we got through, so this time I go northeast. Northeast fork it will be, says Gar. Might take us just a bit longer that way, but I think we'll have firmer ground under our feet. I'll take the lead, and you three follow close. Keep your eyes open. You covered several hundred yards along the new branch of the path. Renanar suddenly mentions the ground fields odd. He stomps on the path and shakes his head. Can you feel that? He says, looking to each of you in turn. Gar and Jod shake their heads. Feels like it's hollow. Does it feel like it's hollow? Do you feel that, Sir Crokington? There's something hollow, all right, says Wellnor, spurking. And it's covered by that ugly skull cap of yours. Want me to come over and have a whap on it? Listen, says Jod, ignoring what is easy. I'll stomp again. You three dust with a loud rubble and a rush of air. The trail directly beneath your feet suddenly gives way. You instinctively shoot out your arms, your elasto tongue, in a desperate bid to grab onto something, but the effort is in vain. You tumble headlong into the darkness, through a shower of earth and stone, picking a number. Bonus of 40. 20 from agility, 10 from body, 10 from luck. Gotta get 75 or more, or fall badly. Pick now. 126 success. You land hard on what feels like packed earth, but manage to survive the jarring impact without sustaining any serious damage. Dazed from the fall, but still very much alive, you stagger to your feet, grasping for breath, and begin to take in your new surroundings. As you gather your bearings and bring your fateful life source to life, you begin to realise you are now alone, standing in a broad, slightly rounded, earthen tunnel, running north and south. The unmistakable stench of what fills the damp air. Now, did they fall somewhere else, or did they not fall at all? There is no sign of your three companions, and you pray they did not topple into the hidden shaft after you. A large mound of earth and rubble sits against the east wall of the tunnel. You can only assume that now blocks the compressed shaft through which you fell. You promptly resolve to find your way out of this dark lair and continue on with your mission without falling victim to whatever bored these large tunnels. Oh yes, rounded tunnels. So this isn't a mine or a quarry, partly because no one would mine or quarry in the Dragonmere swamp. You just get wet. Although I guess if there's something very valuable there, they'll just... Someone would say, oh, mine it anyway. If people die, they die. I want my shiny things. You're standing at the base of a tall mound of earth and wood. To the north and south, the broad earthen tunnel passes out of sight into darkness. Just beyond the towering mound, through now collapsed and inaccessible, is the shaft to which you fell. Okay, I'm sort of near to the southeast corner of a twisty passage. I'm going to go south first. You trek along the tunnel, suddenly comes to an abrupt halt as a large carnage crawler emerges from the gloom up ahead. The hideous, many-legged insect, its fanged-wigged circular mouth stretched wide, surges forward and attacks. It's a large carnage crawler. Just going to read the lore again. These massive, many-legged arthropods crawl caves and other dark, out-of-the-way places, and this is certainly that, in search of dead and decaying flesh on which to feast. Well, I guess you're going to have to do a bit of work to get me to dead and decaying, and I'm not going to let that happen. I'm going to club it if it tries. Their cavernous circular mouths are ringed with razor-sharp teeth. The exoskeletons of carnage crawlers are exceedingly strong and sometimes used in the crafting of various pieces of armour. Alright, let us fight it. The carnage crawler snaps into its powerful fang-winged jaws. Going, keep going. It is slain. 6 XP. You step from the oozing carcass of the carnage crawler and make a quick check of your equipment, with your eyes starting to water from the nauseating odour rising up from the creature's remains. You promptly set off along the tunnel. Alright. This has got a southeast corner, but it's rounded off, so the very southeast corner isn't there. Another large carnage crawler. Just going to quick combat that. 5 XP. Alright, looking around. Quick combat, another 6 XP. I went along the south end, and then I got most of the way to the other end, to the west part, but then I had to go north. North a bit. There's a four-way junction here. Just a little bit southwest of the centre. There's an alcove to the north. Scattering of bones, including several human skulls, litters the floor at the end of the earthen tunnel. You make a quick search of the remains and discover the following. It's just some generic loot. Some of it, I'll pick up the good stuff and sell it later. 6 gold, 3 trinkets worth 17 gold, so that's 23 gold. I guess I'll sell it quickly before I get to anywhere where I can actually spend money. Satisfied you haven't overlooked anything, you once again prepare to set off and find your way out of this dark subterranean lair. And there's the alcove, nothing there. Well, there's a longer, short passage to the east. A scattering of bones, including several human skulls, litters the floor at the end of this earthen tunnel. Now, of course, one implication is the carnage crawler ate them. You know, because people probably have gone into the swamp for various reasons, herbs, shortcuts, hiding from society. They got really drunk and aren't really sure why they went there. And then they found, oh no! And then they get eaten by a carnage crawler. Yeah, no, as you do. And then stop doing it because you're dead. Make a quick search of the remains and discover the following. Some other loot, including a well-crafted leather braceplate, which has 4 stamina points. Obviously, I'm not going to be equipping any of this stuff, because pretty quickly in the game, generic loot is no good for equipping. Of course, that's probably for the first 10 or 20 hours of play, you're going to be constantly looking at your loot and maybe occasionally swapping things out. But Once you've hunted the phantom assassin, got a ridiculous pile of gold, and then used that to buy unmatched plate all round. Generic loot is just for selling. Selling where presumably it can be used to the next adventurers and, you know, militia, guards, soldiers, travellers that have to look after themselves, etc., etc., etc. Satisfied you haven't overlooked anything, you once again prepare to set off and find your way out of this dark subterranean lair. Okay. Quick. And combat. Another 6 XP for another Carnage Caller. Right, back to the crossroads. I started off south. I've gone north. I've done east. Now to do west. Another large Carnage Caller. How many Carnage Crawlers are in here? Carnage Crawlers suddenly become eusocial? Or something? There's another one. Or is it just the same Carnage Crawler over and over again? Because wizards. Okay, we've got a T-junction now. It goes north. And it goes a little bit to the south. You freeze in mid-step and instinctively draw yourself into combat-ready stance as a massive Carnage Crawler crawls out of the darkness to the south. The hideous many-legged creature. Its circular fang-winged mouth stretched wide, swiftly bears down on you. It's a massive Carnage Crawler. It's got a lot more health than the others. Savage bite of your enemy tears into your flesh. Snaps you its powerful fang-winged jaws. And I keep bashing it. Bash, 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 bash. Bash to death. 8 XP, 64 XP to general. Foul stench rises up from the oozing carcass of the massive Carnage Crawler. With your eyes watering, you take a few moments to check over your gear, but once again setting off along the tunnel. Alright, what's in the southwest corner? As you reach the end of the tunnel, you suddenly take notice of a wide column of pale light filtering down from the angled shaft in the western wall. Much to your profound relief, the broad earthen chute, which is large enough to accommodate you, although that really doesn't mean much for Sir Croakington, appears to climb up to the surface far above. It heads head north. The real reason is I want to see what's there. Although if anyone asks the reason is, I'm going to make sure there's no monsters to sneak up on me while I'm climbing a slope and can be easily be tripped. That's the excuse. Okay, I've made my way north and then east. There's a little alcove to the north. Another pile of loot. Pick up the good stuff. Leave it be. Almost back to where we started, northeast corner, and another pile of loot, including an uncommon Ardivarian artifact. Those can be exchanged for battle markers, which are used for various things. Not as much as they used to be, because we don't seem to be having... We haven't had any of those Well of Blaze raffles for a while. Some stuff. Unmatched bone gauntlets. They got 6 stamina points, so they'll probably sell for 1,000 or so. And 25 gold. Okay, I've now thoroughly explored every teeny teeny bit of these tunnels. Every single part of them, I've been there. Well, other than the tiny bits which even Sir Croakington doesn't fit in. We'll just let them be. Right, climb up the shaft towards a distant light. You scramble up the steep earthen chute and breathe a deep sigh of relief when your head finally pokes up through the open air. Before you even had a chance to get your bearings. 4 hands take arm hold of, well, I guess your arms and legs, one of each. Two hands for the arms, 2 hands for the leg, and hoist you out of the tunnel. You sit down on your feet at the edge of the dark opening through which you've just emerged, directly before your 3 startled guides. Well, where have you been? Says Gar. That's a Carnage Crawler's hole you just popped out of. Shudder to think what you might have run into down there. He provides your companions with a brief but colourful account of your trek through the tunnels, ending with your battle against a massive carnage crawler. Gar initiates a shoulder cross and tells you he's glad to have you above ground. I hate to have to report a high medal to say we lost you down some hole in the swamp, he says, smirking. Well then, from now on we'll just tread just a bit more carefully. After taking a few minutes to recover from your recent deal, you quickly check over your gear and once again set off for the ruined temple, with your three guides leading the way. It is early afternoon when Gar announces you're approaching the ruined fallen tree, as you slap one of the countless bouting insects that's taken to feasting on you since first setting foot to the swamp. Although, to be fair, I do feast on them as well, so it all balances out in the end. Jod nudges your arm and points to the north there, rising out of the soft ground at the edge of the dark pool of muck, on the splintered remains of several towering pillars. Well, okay, we're back on the main route. And this everything here is as it was the first time round, so I'm just going to pause while I read it myself. Okay, undead attack. And once again, I go into the temple. And this is as it was before. Promptly set off to explore the ruins of Fallen Tree. Okay, now to actually explore the temple this time. I'm on the south side, in the middle. The doors are sealed shut. Doesn't appear to be any way of opening them. But after having cleared hundreds of dungeons in my time, Sir Croakington knows that once you finish off the dungeon, a way out appears. Even if it's something quite unexpected, like that dungeon with all the crabs, where you had to find a magical teleporting stick. Alright, I'm going to start by going east. An eerie silence fills the crumbling passages of the ancient Temple of Fallen Tree. Alright, southeast corner. A massive bronze sculpture of a sword stands in the corner of the passage. The tarnished sword, if it were an actual weapon, would be large enough for a giant to wield. So way too big for Sir Croakington. Sometimes she uses comically large weapons, but this is just too much. A stone snake, each of its blades carved in exacting detail, winds its way around the blade of the bronze sword. The snake's head, adorned with the engraved Takibak, peers up at you from behind the broad hilt. Okay, that'll probably do something later. Alright, a bit north, and then the passage has a little square that goes in to the northwest. On the opposite side of the square, and there's passages to the west and to the north. Stone lever. Sturdy stone lever protrudes from the back wall of this wide alcove. A familiar symbol, Takibak, is engraved at the edge of the square shaft. The lever, currently set in its up position, looks as if it can be pulled down. I'll pull it down. With great effort, you manage to pull the stone lever down. When the thick length of stone has reached its lowest possible position, you release your grip. It's down and it refuses to budge, which is usually a sign that it's supposed to stay down. Because fortunately, there's no way to do these puzzles where you can just say, oh, you pressed the wrong button at the wrong time. Well, you can never solve this puzzle. Ta-ta! Well, you'll never find out the treasures. Because that's just really annoying. So if something would ruin it, you can't do it. It's just the rules. I mean, out of game, it's the GM doesn't want you to be able to ruin your fun for no reason at all. Because, well, honestly, you go into a temple, you see a lever. Unless there's something very obvious, some sort of message saying, if you pull this lever, you will die, or something like that. And along the way, he encounters several journals about people who said, yeah, I went with my companion, he pulled this lever, and then he died. So don't pull the lever. In that case, having a, you pull this lever and you die, would be allowable. But most circumstances, no. And west, there's another lever. A sturdy stone symbol adorns, protrudes from the back wall of this wide alcove. Familiar symbols, an eye, is engraved on the end of the square shaft. The lever, currently set into the up position, looks as if it can be pulled down. All right, eye. So this dungeon is somehow tied into Rachna's mad. Even if it might just be using the same symbols, because Rachna is a member of the Headless Lady cult, and thus was always thinking about the same symbols. Pull the lever. The stone lever refuses to budge. You're about to remove your hand from the lever when a sudden jolt of energy surges up your arm, causing you to cry out in agonizing pain. Agonizing wave of pain passes through you. You promptly release your grip on the lever and wildly step back. Okay, I'm going to set the...
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
Iron plate of dials to all eyes. Adjust the dials. I set dials. Pull the lever. Nope, it still refuses to... The dials are all at eye, so it's a bit more complicated than that. I still get shocked. That's not the solution. All right, maybe I have to do something else. A sharp, rasping hiss erupts from the gloom up ahead as a massive black-scaled serpent draws its slivers view. The fearsome beast is gaping more, revealing a set of long and deadly fangs. Swiftly winds its way towards you. You instinctively draw yourself into a defensive stance as you prepare to engage the giant snake. Let us begin combat with a black-scaled serpent. You can also flee. You sometimes... Yeah, I could do that, is what Sir Grogan sometimes thinks. The massive black-scaled serpent hisses as it lunges at you. The savage bite of your enemy tears into your flesh for 8 damage. I keep swinging, and keep swinging. Do 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 do. Swing, 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 swing. Slain. 73 XP. A thin pool of dark blood slowly widens beneath the carcass of the slain serpent. Pungent odour wafts up from the snake's remains and fills the passage, causing your eyes to water. Suddenly, somewhere far off along the gloom-streaked passage, you hear the sharp, unmistakable sound of metal striking metal. The eerie din lasts for several moments before falling silent. Curious as to what the sound may portend, and eager to resume your mission, you make a quick check of your equipment before once again setting off along the corridor. Okay. Sinister, lurching figure emerges from the gloom ahead. You instinctively draw yourself into a defensive stance as the unmistakable stench of death fills the passage now. Now, I've got the Black Tor amulet equipped. It's an undead, so I'm going to equip Tiara's staff. Begin combat. Tiara's staff has helped lower the difficulty of this enemy. That's why I equipped it. So it's now gone from a 12 plus to an 8 plus or something like that. The skeletal huntsman slashes you with its decayed blade. Keep going, keep going, keep going. Although it's a special, but I didn't read it. It is slain. 25 XP. Stepping over the remains of the undead creature, you promptly resume your trek along the passage, more eager than ever to find the statue of the headless lady and rid yourself of Black Tor's curse. Now, since this is, you know, a video game dungeon, it's not just, it won't just be you get to the thing and then you're fine. There'll be a puzzle, something with these levers and these swords and these snakes and these statues. Northeast corner, a massive bronze sculpture of a sword stands in the corner of the passage. Tarnished sword, if it were an actual weapon, would be large enough for a giant to wield. Stone stake, each of its scales carved in exacting detail, winds its way around the broadsword. The snake's head, adorned with an engraved skull, peers out at you from behind the sword's broad hilt. Alright, so we've got a skull in the northeast. It's another skeletal hunter sneaked up on me. Jarrah's staff. A deathly chill passes through you as your undead foe drains your life force. That's for six damage from it. Alright, keep going, keep going, keep going. And slain. Another 25 XP. And that ends like the previous one ended. I'll take this time to do a bit of healing. Northeast skull. And southeast. The shattered remains of a bronze snake, which once wound its way around the blade of a bronze sword, lie heaped at the foot of the sculpture. Apparently something I did brought it to life. Possibly that lever I pulled. Alright, northeast skull. Is a skeletal avenger. Begin combat. Slashes you with its rusted sword. It was a perfectly fine sword when I got it. Drains my life force for 10 damage. It fights just like the skeletal hunter. As you'd kind of expect. And there we are. Alright, now to check out. Alright, this northwest corner, there's another little square. Nothing along it though. In the very northwest corner, a massive bronze sculpture of a sword stands in the core of this passage. The tarnished sword, if it were an actual weapon, would be large enough for a giant to wield. Stone snake, each of its scales carved in exacting detail, winds its way around the blade of the bronze sword. The snake's head, adorned with a single eye, peers out at you from behind the sword's broad hilt. Okay, it's not the dial thing, because we already set it to all eyes. Alright, now I'm going south. Southwest corner, it's another one of those swords. A stone snake, each of its scales carved in exact detail, winds its way around the blade of the bronze sword. The snake's head, adorned with an engraved moon, peers out at you from behind the sword's broad hilt. Alright, back along the south side, an avenging ghoul. What's it avenging? I don't care. I'm smashing it anyway. And then back to the entrance. Yeah. So this room is, it's a square with stuff going into the middle. Here's one of the passages. Alright, little cut-offs, ghoul seeker, quick combat, 25 XP. Alright, and there was a little wet tank, little blob going in from the southwest corner. And now I go east from there. Alright, I'm at a crossroads. West to where we've been, north and east and south to a little alcove, and then north to a twisty passage. South. A stone lever protrudes from the back wall of this wide alcove. A familiar symbol, a moon, is carved at the end of this square shaft. The lever, currently set into up position, looks as if it's pulled down. Pull the lever! With great effort, you manage to pull the stone lever down. When the thick length of stone has reached its lowest possible position, you release your grip. Head back north. And here's another lever with a skull. This will probably release the skull snake. Wrapped around, curled around the sword. Pull the lever. softly as possible. With great effort, she managed to pull the stone lever down. When the thick length of stone has reached its lowest possible position, you release your grip. Head back west. What's to the north? A massive iron door completely seals off the corridor to the east. Three familiar symbols, an eye, a moon, and a skull, are engraved inside a circle at the centre of the door. The upper left corner of the door bears an engraving of a serpent coiled around the blade of a sword. All right, attempt to open the door. Nope, can't open it yet. All right, I've got to deal with those two snakes then. Sharp, rasping hiss erupts into the gloom up ahead as a massive black-scaled serpent slithers into view. The fearsome beast, its gaping maw revealing a set of long and deadly fangs, swiftly winds its way towards you. You instinctively draw yourself into defensive stance as you prepare to engage the giant snake. Well, I have the option to flee. What if I take it? You take flight along the corridor, praying you'll be able to outdistance the fearsome serpent. Much to your surprise, however, the massive snake seems to have no interest in pursuing you. You stop and watch as the black-scaled serpent slowly slithers off into the gloom. All right, let's have a look at these statues now. Sculpture of a sword. There's a shattered remains of a bronze snake. Oh yeah, probably when it broke out of the statue, there's a covering of stone around it, like in the series Gargoyles, and that was smashed around the edge. Alright, another black-scaled serpent. Well, yep, maybe the one I just fled from. Begin combat. The black-scaled serpent hisses as it lunges at you. And I smash it. Savage bite of the enemy tears into my flesh. Another bite for 13 damage and slain. 73 XP. A thin pool of dark blood suddenly widens beneath the carcass of the slain serpent. Pungent odor wafts up from the snake's remains and fills the passage, causing your eyes to water. Suddenly, somewhere far off into the gloom-filled passage, you hear the sharp, unmistakable sound of metal striking metal. The eerie din lasts for several moments before falling silent. Curious as to what the sound might portend, and eager to resume your mission, you make a quick check of your equipment for once again setting off along the corridor. All right, let's have a check at that door. All right, just one from this serpent now. I'm checking the door. Now, one from the serpent. Check the door. The upper left and upper right corners of the door each bear an engraving of a coiled serpent coiled around the blade of the sword. Yes. Yeah, yes. As I thought, as you slay more of these serpents, their symbols appear on the door. Begin combat. Let's just fight this another black-scaled serpent. Bashy, bash, 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 slain. 73 XP. A thin pool of dark blood. So actually, this dies exactly like the previous two, so I can skip over that. Curious to what the sound might portend, and eager to resume your mission, you make a quick check of your equipment before once again setting off along the corridor. Now, can I pull the lever I couldn't do before? Skeletal Avenger, quick combat, 25 XP. In all this XP is slowly adding up. Ghoul Seeker, quick combat, 25 XP. I wouldn't say this is a grind spot, because amongst other things, there's no way to heal. Well, full heal, I mean, you can heal yourself using your Neville Reserve. Right, pull the lever. With great effort, you manage to pull the stone lever down. When the thick length of stone has reached its lowest possible position, you release your grip. Right, last serpent. Quick combat it. Is slain, 73 XP. And it dies, it stinks, there's a clattering of metal, and a think this probably opens the door. Oh, the enchantment of metal helped you avoid two rolls of one. Thank you, enchantment of metal. Okay, now to the door. There should be four of those snaky, swordy symbols on it. The upper left, upper right, lower left, and lower right corners of the door, each bear an engraving of a serpent coiled around the blade of a sword. Attempt to open the door. 64 XP to general. The instant your hands press against the massive stone door, the towering slab of metal shimmers brightly for several seconds and then vanishes. The passage to the east is now clear. Alright. Now, presumably there'll be the statue there, because otherwise I wouldn't have to solve a puzzle to get to it. I go east and then south. I think this will be the last part of the dungeon. The imposing, headless statue of a world woman, her long arms outstretched to the east, dominates the centre of this cavernous stone chamber. The towering sculpture is nearly identical to the one you've encountered in the ruins of Blackthorn. Please don't curse me, please don't curse me, please don't curse me! Standing before the statue, you're overcome by a strange sense of calm. Helps you to momentarily forget the peril that surrounds you in this ancient temple. Particular item to use. Well, it's a pouch of stones. Wherever they are. Pouch of marked stones. Yep, use the pouch of marked stones. 256 experience to general. And since I was allowed to use it, it means it was the right thing. Especially since I got some XP for it as well. You reach into your leather pouch and retrieve the three marked stones. Recalling Emmett Hare's instructions, you cast the stones down at the feet of the statue. Almost at once, it feels as if the great weight has been lifted from your soul.
Ooh.
Finally! Finally that curse is gone. The three stones clatter about the base of the statue, each of them flipping and tumbling until their emblazoned marks have turned face up. The three familiar symbols, an eye, a skull, a moon and a skull, now lay spread out at the feet of the headless lady. An overwhelming sense of relief washes over you, but the pleasant sensation is short-lived. Without warning, the floor shudders. Violently, small cracks spread beneath the massive blocks that make up the temple walls, and chunks of stone begin dropping from the chamber's domed ceiling. Now, come on! This isn't a tomb! This is a temple! It's not supposed to collapse once you use it once! As you turn towards the exit from the chamber, your foot splashes through a shallow puddle, forming from a thin fissure in the floor. Oh, engulfs you when you realise that fallen tree is sinking into the swamp. No, come on, no, get cursed. I mean, it seems to be a very easy curse to get, so if someone else gets cursed, they're just screwed. They won't be able to get themselves uncursed. They'll just get cursed forever. Although, I don't know, maybe the curse only has enough charges to curse one person. And thus, it won't be used again. Although I think this is working. This is doing it because that just always happens. When you finish a dungeon, and then it starts falling down. Just because. Because it's what people expect. You rush out of the collapsing chamber, narrowly dodging the toppling chunks of stone as they smash into the floor on all sides. As you reach the grand arch that serves as the threshold for the womb, you turn and watch as the statue of the headless lady is unceremoniously crushed beneath the impossible bulk of a falling slab of rock. Well, oh dear. I don't know what that means, but it means something. Covering your face to avoid breathing in the billowing dust that's flowing, following you out of the chamber, you slip into the passage to the north. You're standing before the threshold of the chamber that houses the towering statue of the Headless Lady. A massive heap of rubble now fills the grand stone arch that led into the cavernous room. A series of violent shudders runs through the floor and pass directly beneath your feet, as the ancient walls on either side of the passage continue to shake and buckle. The temple known as Fallen Tree is swiftly sinking into the swamp. You immediately realise you just make your way out of the collapsing structure before you become trapped here forever. Alright. Suddenly, a violent tremor surges along the passage, nearly shaking you off your feet. Before you even had a chance to steady yourself, part of the nearby wall buckles and collapses. Large chunks of stone topple into the corridor around you, picking a number. Bonus to 39. 19 from agility, 10 from body, 10 from luck. Alright, I think if I equip the Spruce Smasher, I can get that up to 20 agility. Yes, I did. I mean, you might as well. Alright, pick now. 119 success. You twist it aside, narrowly dodging one of the falling chunks of stone from the toppling wall. Wasting no time, you step over the heap of rubble in the centre of the passage and quickly move off along the shaking corridor. Alright, to the crossroads. Oh, and something else has turned up. A violent tremor surges along the passage, nearly shaking you off your feet. Before you even have the chance to steady yourself, part of the nearby wall buckles and collapses. Large chunks of stone topple into the corridor all around you. Picking a number. Same check again. Pick now. 121 success. You twist to your side. No, spring to the side. Narrowly dodging one of the falling chunks of stone from the toppling wall. Wasting no time, you step over a heap of rubble in the centre of the passage and quickly move off along the shaking corridor. I'll go west a bit, and it's another. Same check again. 71, failure. One of the falling chunks of stone glances off you, knocking you onto the floor of the passage. Wounded, very much alive, 12 damage. You stagger to your feet and quickly move off along the shaking corridor. All right, and west one more. All right, now make my way to the entrance and hope I can get out. More tremors. More wall collapse. Same check again. Pick now. 100 success. You spring to the side, narrowly dodging one of the falling chunks of stone from the toppling wall. Wasting no time, you step onto a heap of rubble in the centre of the passage and quickly move off along the shaking corridor. Alright. You're standing just inside the massive stone doors through which you entered the ruined temple. The doors are still sealed shut. Doesn't appear to be any way of opening them. Oh, bugger. That's bad. The passage continues to shudder. Several large chunks of stone drop from the ceiling and shatter upon impact with the floor. A steady stream of water seeps into the corridor from a long fissure that runs down its centre. Suddenly, you're taken aback when the massive stone doors suddenly shudder and swing outwards, flooding the shaking passage with the dim grey light of the swamp. Wasting not even a second, you sprint out through the opening doors and wade through a pool of, swim through a pool of muck that's several times taller than me, before heading onto a patch of solid ground to the west. You've covered less than a dozen yards when a tremendous roar, like the guttural bellow of some gigantic bog creature, rises into the air. You turn and watch with a mix of relief and awe as the ancient Temple of Fallen Tree begins to rapidly vanish beneath the murky, churning waters of Dragonmere Deep. Shouts from behind turn your gaze from the sinking temple to two bloodied, mud-covered figures on their way towards you. You immediately recognise Gar and Welnor. The two guides have both been wounded, but both are very much alive. Your eyes quickly scour the surrounding mire. There is no sign of any of the undead that ambushed you upon your arrival yet. Well, alright, first we move then. Otherwise they'd still be fighting undead. You suddenly realise Jod is not here. They're all gone, says Gar, as Welnor moves up to help you step out of the churning mire. Every last one of them is gone. A number of them just collapsed when his temple started to crumble. Where's Jod? Did he find you? He went in after you. You shake your head and tell Gar you never saw Jod anywhere in the ruined temple. Together with your two bad companions, you turn and stare out across the perilous pool of muck into which the last remnants of fallen tree are slowly sinking. Jod knows our temples, maybe better than anyone, says Wernor, his tone much more hopeful than resolute. If anyone could have made its way out of here, even after all this, it's Jod. As Wernor begins moving around the perimeter of the temple site, calling out for Jod, you and Gar waste no time embarking upon a search in the other direction. The swamp bubble hisses and bubbles as the mighty monuments of thick stone walls of fallen tree continue to dip beneath the muddy surface of the bog. For nearly an hour, the three of you roam the edge of the shrunken ruins, seeking any sign of your missing companions. Several times, Wernor ventures into the mire, leaping across the tops of disappearing stone columns while calling out for Jod. Even just a few moments longer in there, you've likely shared Jod's fate, says Gar, his tone grim as his eyes continue to scour the surrounding swamp. Just a small while longer. Had he been able to get out, he'd be here with us now. At last, Gar tells you and Wernor, there was little hope that Jod survived the temple's collapse. He suggests you make your way to Wanderstone, while there is still enough daylight by which to navigate the swamp.
Oh.
Looks like the curse took one more person. Wernor, though initially opposed to giving up the search for Jod, ultimately abandons his protests as he seems to accept the futility of continuing the hunt. He's now at West, the most ancient site of our faith, says Gar, as the three of you bid a long, final, solemn farewell to Jod Longhide. May Our Lady bring him comfort as he sleeps. With Gar leading the way, three of you embark on the long and arduous trek out of the southern reaches of Dragonmere Deep. A difficult, though uneventful journey that last comes to an end inside the stables at the edge of Wanderstone. There, waiting in their stalls just as you've left them, are your four enchanted steeds.
Oh.
And one of them is without a rider. Oh, sad horse, sad me. Few words are exchanged as you, Gar, and Wernor prepare your horses the lengthy journey back to High Meadow. At Gar's suggestion, three of you decided to set out at once. Wernor, always the quietest of your three guys, seemed to have taken Jod's passing the hardest. You sense that he and Jod were closer to each other than to Gar, perhaps due to their similarity in age. They have known each other for a long time. I'll lead his horse back with us, as Wernor, as he begins to tack up the steed of his departed friend and companion. You don't suppose we should make one last? A loud groan tears through the temple as a massive set of doors at its western end subtly opens. Your widening eyes are immediately drawn to the strange and menacing spectacle now framed between the sturdy timbers of the broad portal. Okay, has Woundskin set something else my way? A mud-covered figure, his face and torso almost completely hidden beneath a running layer of foul ooze, staggers into the stable and curses and struggles to wipe some of the muck out of his eyes. You immediately recognize Jod and rush forward with Gar and Wernor to greet your returning companion with a shoulder cross. You had waited just a bit longer, he says, in a sarcastic tone, amidst the long, reaching gasps. I guess he was so covered in mud, it was actually perfect camouflage. Could see you lot heading away just as I broke the surface of that bog. Of course, I still had some work to do to get out from under some of that rubble. Remind me to tell you all about it sometime. When it's not so fresh in my mind. This muck is something else. Jod draws his sword and casts the mud-covered weapon onto the stable floor. He wipes away some of the muck and ooze streaming down his brow and smiles, casting a wary glance at each of you in turn. Then he laughs. Glad to see you made it out of here, he says to you, wiping his hand on his leather sleeves. Very big block of stone almost saw to it that I didn't. It's a good thing I'm able to hold my breath. Too fair, Sir Croakington. Other than getting out alive, I take it your curse is gone? You provide Jod with a quick account of your adventure inside Fallen Tree. At the conclusion of your tale, he nods. And, while still wiping away the blood that clings to nearly every square inch of his attire, he announces he will not leave Wanderstone without both a bath and a swallow of ale. In fact, it will be a bit more than one swallow. The inn we stayed in last night will do for both, says Gar, stepping towards the stable's door. We could probably all do with a wash, first more so than others. You're not in any rush to get back to High Meadow, Sir Croakington, are you? Good, come on then. Just tell people you fell into the swamp, says Wonor, as he steps past Jod. His remark eliciting a scornful glance from his muck-covered companions. Jod picks up his sword, does his best to clean off the blade, and returns the weapon to his sheath. He glances at you, rolls his eyes, and turns to the door. Content to put off the immediate return to High Meadow for a much-needed respite and wash, you follow your three guides out of the stables and back along the narrow lane that winds its way towards the clustered heart of Wanderstone. And that is the end of this adventure. Oh, and everybody lived. Isn't that nice? Well, other than all the people in Westgrove and the bandits that I had to kill and all those skeletons I have to fight. There were people once. Okay, everyone I particularly care about lived. Anyway, it's the end of the adventure. 2,048 experience to general. 256 experience to all skills and powers. Fairly nice. And apparently we made our way back to High Meadow, but nothing exciting happened along the way, so it wasn't recorded. So presumably we just, I don't know, we got to the Tellurian Pike, found some mercenaries that were going off to Twithick, hitched a ride on their wagon until we got a little bit past Talonus, and then we had to make our own way. And then we just wandered our own way back to High Meadow. Something like that. I mean, we might have come across some ogres or bandits or goblins on the way, but they were so utterly unremarkable they weren't even worth writing about. Anyway, next time for Ironwind. The man in red armour steps forward and thrusts out his right hand. You instinctively fall back and assume a defensive stance. You're swift for manoeuvre, eliciting a series of puzzled looks from both the armoured stranger and the grim, hooded men at his side. All right, go back. That will be next adventure. Now I'm just going to pop over to Hawkclaw to save. And until then, until we return again to go to Fort Ironwind, farewell, fellow adventurers.